Había granaderos en ese momento y nuestras compañeras nada más estaban pidiendo que se les solucionara lo que ya se ha mencionado. Después de un instante, los granaderos, la policía, empezó a atacar a nuestras compañeras y compañeros que se encontraban en el lugar. Ellas y ellos, al momento de ver todo esto, corrieron a los autobuses y se subieron. Pero al momento de que esto pasara, la policía empezó a agredir a nuestros compañeros y compañeras, dejándolas con algunas lesiones graves. Y también dañaron lo que fueron los autobuses, les quebraron los vidrios y les empezaron a decir muchas majaderías y muchos insultos. Nuestros compañeros regresaron a la institución y en este momento se dieron cuenta que algunas personas faltaban, así que había algunos desaparecidos. En ese momento se empezó a hacer muchas llamadas para localizarlos y finalmente por la noche se lograron comunicar con los compañeros y ahora pues están todos, se podría decir que bien, pero algunos heridos. El día 3 de junio, por las 4 de la tarde aproximadamente, la Policía Federal y Estatal intentaron entrar a las instalaciones de nuestra institución por la parte trasera. En este momento, nuestras compañeras hicieron una valla por el portón. Muchos grupos de compañeras y compañeros ahí estaban ayudándonos y apoyando para que la policía no lograra entrar a la institución. Fue de esta manera que la policía, pues en cierta forma se retiró. Pero el día 4 de junio por la madrugada nuevamente intentó ingresar a nuestra institución. En este momento el pueblo de Cañada apoyó a nuestras compañeras para que no lograran entrar. Pero la policía ya amenazó a nuestras compañeras diciendo que si seguían con las actividades, con cualquier cosa, siguiendo con todo lo que siguieran, no iban a dudar en volver a regresar y ahora sí tomar las medidas que se tuvieran que tomar. Esto es preocupante para nosotras, ya que ¿a quién le va a gustar que la policía entre a su casa? A nadie, porque si entra no va a ser para nada bueno. Al momento de que nuestras compañeras empezaron a hacer todas estas actividades, pues hubo consecuencias contra nosotros. Fue que nos empezaron a quitar recursos que llegaban a nuestra normal, porque nuestra normal es un internado. Se lo quitó lo que fue la ración y pues no está llegando comida al internado. Esto pues es nuestra principal debilidad, porque si no hay comida, pues no hay nada. Y nosotros queremos hacer mención para que todo esto lo lleven y lo compartan, lo publiquen, para que realmente vean las cosas que están pasando en Aguascalientes, todo lo que están ocultando y todo, realmente todo lo que está pasando y lo que no dicen.
En los últimos años, el gobierno mexicano ha intensificado su campaña para eliminar las normales rurales, donde se forman maestros progresistas.
Estás escuchando el Informativo Pacífica.
También puedes escuchar estas y otras ediciones del Informativo Pacífica en nuestro blog, pueblosinfronteras.wordpress.com.
No envidiaba la presidencial.
En Estados Unidos, ciudadanos se manifiestan contra los reportes presupuestales del gobierno de Donald Trump, asegurando que estos dejarán a mucha gente excluida de servicio médico. Francesca Emanuele viene con los detalles.
El cuerpo de Cheryl ha resistido a 9 cánceres y a un trastorno congénito llamado síndrome de Bloom. A sus 41 años protesta frente al Congreso estadounidense en contra del denominado Trumpcare. De aprobarse, podría perder su seguro o en el mejor de los casos tendría que pagar primas altísimas por ser una persona con enfermedades preexistentes.
Si no tengo el medicamento que necesito, estaré confinada en mi casa. Es un medicamento para el sistema inmune. Y si no lo tengo, no estaría viva. Dependo de él. Es un medicamento muy caro, unos $1,800 por semana. Si me quitan el acceso a él, moriré.
Las políticas del actual gobierno son un atentado al bienestar de los estadounidenses, dicen estos manifestantes. Con el Trumpcare se ejecutarían recortes al programa Medicaid, que brinda un seguro de salud a 70 millones de ciudadanos, entre ellos a 10 millones de personas con discapacidad.
Para muchas personas con discapacidad, para casi todas las personas con discapacidad, actualmente podría ser destruido por un recorte de 800 mil millones.
Ellos no son los únicos que rechazan esta reforma de salud. Un reciente estudio de la Fundación Kaiser señala que el 69% de los estadounidenses tampoco la apoya.
Los estados tendrán restricciones muy duras en sus presupuestos de salud y tendrán que tomar decisiones engañosas, por ejemplo, proveer terapias de lenguaje a menores o brindar cuidados a los ancianos en sus hogares. Y digo que son decisiones engañosas porque no se debería prescindir de nada de ello, sino que deberíamos ser capaces de brindar todos estos servicios.
Con la propuesta sanitaria, 14 millones de personas podrían quedarse sin seguro de salud para 2018 y un total de 23 millones en 2026. La Cámara de Representantes del Congreso ya aprobó el llamado Trump Care. Solo falta una votación en el Senado para que este proyecto o bien se convierta en ley o bien sea desestimado. Francesca Manuele, Telesur, Washington DC.
En Estados Unidos arrestan a una supuesta informante acusándola de filtrar información confidencial a la prensa. Aliana Nieves tiene más detalles.
Las autoridades estadounidenses informan del arresto de una contratista de los servicios de inteligencia. Se cree que filtró información confidencial a los medios de comunicación. Reality Winner, de 25 años, fue detenida el pasado sábado. Trabajaba como analista para una empresa con proveedora de los servicios de inteligencia y tenía acceso a datos clasificados de la NSA. Poco antes de anunciarse la detención, el medio The Intercept publicaba un informe de la NSA sobre la supuesta interferencia rusa en la campaña electoral. El portavoz del presidente ruso, Dmitry Peskov, lo ha negado rotundamente, calificándolo de información sin fundamento. Desde WikiLeaks han ofrecido una recompensa para dar con la denunciante de Winner ante las autoridades.
El sitio digital Luna de Alabama, hablando sobre el tema, publica un artículo titulado No confíes en el Intercept y cómo traicionar una fuente de información. También insiste en que el reporte de inteligencia de la Agencia de Seguridad Nacional no muestra que Rusia realizó un ciberataque, al tiempo que señala que la joven Winner, la supuesta denunciante del documento, probablemente será enviada a prisión por varios años o el resto de su vida. La Luna de Alabama señala que The Intercept fue creado con el fin de privatizar documentos de la Agencia de Seguridad Nacional que habían sido filtrados por Edward Snowden. Dichos documentos prueban que la NSA literalmente estaba hackeando y copiando todos los medios electrónicos de comunicación del planeta, que estaba violando las leyes que prohíben espiar a ciudadanos de Estados Unidos y que sabotea en gran escala varios tipos de equipo electrónico comercial. Snowden entregó copias de los documentos de la NSA a un pequeño grupo de periodistas, uno de ellos Glenn Greenwald, quien ahora trabaja para el Intercept. Es muy curioso que a pesar de que tienen todos esos documentos en su poder, solo como el 5% de ellos ha sido publicado y no sabemos qué secretos contiene el resto de esos papeles. Intercept es una subdivisión de First Look Media. Fue fundado por Pierre Omidyar, un gran propietario del sitio eBay y su división bancaria PayPal. El artículo del sitio Luna de Alabama añade que el proyecto de microcrédito para rancheros de la India de la Fundación Omidyar, propiedad del dueño del Intercept, en cooperación con gente del partido fascista RSS, terminó con una epidemia de suicidios cuando los campesinos no pudieron pagar sus deudas. La red Omidyar, dice, en cooperación con la USAID, también fundó grupos fascistas que intentaban derrocar el gobierno de Ucrania. Omidyar tenía relaciones muy amigables en la Casa Blanca de Barack Obama. El artículo de la Luna de Alabama subraya que, aunque el Intercept habla de un ciberataque ruso, el documento de la NSA solamente se refiere a operaciones de espionaje, o sea, alguien se asomó o hizo copias de alguna información, pero no manipuló nada, algo que todas las naciones del mundo hacen, incluyendo algunas empresas privadas. Eso, dice, es una colección de datos y es muy diferente a un ciberataque como Stuxnet, que fue usado con la intención de causar daños. El supuesto documento de la NSA nota explícitamente que en esa operación se usaron algunas técnicas diferentes a las usadas por la inteligencia militar rusa y bien pudo haber sido hecha por alguien más. Finalmente, los reporteros señalan que el documento no provee inteligencia primaria. Se trata de un análisis basado en material totalmente desconocido. No incluye ninguna evidencia que apoye sus acusaciones. Y así concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de todos los medios y personas que hicieron posible este programa. En nombre de Toshli y la Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
want to shout out Free Radio Santa Cruz and Coral Reef. We love you. I love you, Santa Cruz. This is Mike 360. I want to shout out Free Radio Santa Cruz and Coral Reef and the Watsonville Brown Berets and Community Rejuvenation Project and the Big Band Springfield Grange. And I'm out.
Go.
Hey, Free Radio, this is John Fidel. Hang in there. No surrender, no quit, no give up.
And coming up next on Free Radio 101.3 FM, it's the Thursday, June 8th, I guess, edition of Bathrobe Spear's Broadsides. Bathrobe Spear is away, but his program is here. So what you're going to hear is a little bit of an introduction, an interview, perhaps, with Katzenjammer Keith McHenry, the Food Not Bombs man, from last Sunday, Sunday the 4th. And then you're going to hear an older show. It's actually the rest of an older show that listeners heard the beginning of on Sunday, from July 17th, 2010, 7 years ago, around the issue of Peace Camp 2010, the summer homeless protest that was actually quite successful in prompting the city to pass the waiting list exception that is now on the books, which says if you're on the waiting list of the River Street Mini Shelter or the non-existent Paul Lee Loft from the Homeless Lack of Services Center, then camping tickets will not be sent to court. And in theory, you don't even have to agree to a camping ticket since you're exempt from them. That's something you can just get help with by contacting the River Street Shelter. You don't get help, actually. You just get on their list. But that's, I guess, a form of help. 459-6644. Area code 831-459-6644. Give them your name. Say, I want to get on the waiting list. And then say, how long do I have before I have to call back? Because usually it's 2 or 3 days. You have to keep calling back to make sure you stay on the list. Then if the police come, they're still likely to ticket you, still likely to demand you move along, still likely to threaten your property, still likely to, in other words, harass you and destroy your good night's sleep. But you won't have to pay an additional $198 for it, in theory, if you're on that list. And that's because Peace Camp 2010, way back in 2010, headed by Ed Fry and other Huff activists, and joined and spearheaded by Chris Doyen, then later known as Commander X, who became involved with Anonymous, the Hackers Collective, sat and slept in front of first the courthouse and then City Hall for 3 months in a nightly protest, which Ed Fry at least financed to the extent of providing a porta potty in his attempt to demand justice for the now dead Robert Blind Bear Facer, who was an older guy who was falsely ticketed for sleeping, as many people still are every night. And, or at least they face the threat of that all the time. And of course, now they've been driven away from the only sanctuary they've had nightly at City Hall, where there's an intense pressure on people, where there was as of Sunday, June 4th, when this recording is being made, to either move or face a bogus obstructing the sidewalk ticket. It is bogus because they aren't obstructing the sidewalk. They make it a clear point to leave half the sidewalk available for passage. And in order to obstruct the sidewalk, you have to willfully block the sidewalk, and they aren't. But that doesn't deter willful misuse of the law by officers acting under color of law to deny people their civil rights with the political objective of driving homeless people out of sight, out of mind, and out of town. So that's still going on. And we're going to go back in this flashback, the second part of it, to hear a discussion of how Santa Cruz was and what this protest was doing way back in 2010 on July 17th. You'll be able to hear the voices of Linda LeMaster, myself, Chris Doyen, and Ed Fry. Let's get into it. A little bit of introduction, and then we'll go to the second half of the July 17th flashback.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star, and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of bread lines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. A song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. It must be packed with social fact, or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial. Tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
So I'm about to go online here with Katzenjammer Keith McHenry, who's talking to me on June 4th, 2017. It's around 5:15, and Keith, you're down at the Food Not Bombs meal at the post office.
Yes, we are down here, and there's some young people have brought a whole bunch of clothing to give out, which they're doing now, and quite amazing.
This is the weekly or monthly free, very, very free market thing, or?
No, this is actually just a random truckload of stuff that has arrived, and totally unexpected.
And, you know, so, I went by the Survival Sleepers, Freedom Sleepers locale, their bedroom, so to speak, at City Hall and the library and the sidewalks surrounding those public buildings. And I saw nary a soul. Of course, on the weekend, those areas have been declared, at least the area at City Hall and at the library, but not the sidewalks, have been closed. But that means people have to bring their own chairs, their own milk crates, their own pillows to sit on. I know there's the 100th Freedom Sleepout is coming up on, it has already happened by the time people have heard this broadcast is played, but... I know we're kind of a little behind the times, but are you intending at this point to bring things for people to sit on, or do you think people will be defying the don't sit down on the place where everybody was sitting before in the low-lying wall at City Hall on June 6th when the 100th anniversary is?
I think they will. I think by just merely having a protest, and we did a lot of advertising like at the Gay Pride March and things like that, I think there will be a lot going on. And thank you, man. And I think that'll be really interesting. Now we have two Rangers calling in on their walk to talk about something. Just a second. So mm-hmm. Let's see what they're up to.
These are Rangers at the Food Not Bombs meal, huh?
Yeah, they're coming around because there's a large group of people gathering, handing out free stuff. And now they're walking over towards our tent and everything. We'll see what they got to say. Now there's a guy waving to me. Yeah, so... Here, 1 second. Where do you? This is where the free market is. Okay, we'll move it closer then.
They're doing their continual make up a story.
What they're telling you to move the area where the free clothing is?
Yeah.
On what basis?
A person said they couldn't go by.
Really?
But, of course, there was nobody that was here not going by. So that was just one of their made-up stories.
And do we have the names of these Rangers?
The Rangers are, MS and Matthews. Yeah. So Matthews is star 354, and MS is star 381. Yeah.
I got you. And is this...
If you could help me move the clothing back, some of the... When the clothing's gone, we're going to put it all over here, okay? Cool. That should be fun. Okay, great. Thanks.
And have you been approached before by Rangers at the Food Not Bombs meal?
No, we never have. No. I mean, what's funny is the actual place for distribution is actually blocking the sidewalk, but they are not talking to them because they are not us.
By blocking the sidewalk, do you mean that they can't go by?
I mean, in reality, the actual distribution of clothing is in the shade, which is great. You could not possibly move a wheelchair through here at all. Yet where our free market was, there's absolutely no problem to move a wheelchair. So they did not talk to the people at the one where all the way from the curb to the wall is covered with clothing and people. Not that I care, because there actually is nobody coming by. So.
Yeah, of course, Matthews is the son of... former mayor and current council member Cynthia Matthews. Not quite sure how he got his position, but that's some of his parentage, you know.
Really? Oh, really? That's the son of Cynthia Matthews, huh? Very interesting. Well, yeah, funny. There's almost nothing left on our free market blanket. It's all under here. It's all underneath the, it's really interesting. Anyway, and the whole place, you could not possibly pass through here at all, but they never talked to those people at all.
Now,
obviously, yeah.
Now, Keith, you left. Failed an appeal of a stay-away order at City Hall based upon the fact that your table was supposedly obstructing the pathway into the main City Hall area, even though there was no definition given as to what obstructing meant, or how there was, in other words, one could not tell what the law is in terms of what is required and what isn't required. It simply becomes a matter of police department orders and their subjective feelings. Do you expect that there's going to be, are you going to be facing a similar situation on Tuesday when you go down to City Hall? Whether you think they will again threaten you with an obstructing the sidewalk or a obstructing the passageway citation?
Yeah, I expect that. Some kind of crazy stuff to occur. Yes, absolutely. I would expect that.
You know, I played your entire hearing on the Sunday show, June 4th, today's show, actually.
Uh-huh.
And people can always review this rather bizarre hearing that you had before Assistant City Manager Scott Collins, to whom I believe you were unduly polite, by the way.
It was funny how polite I was.
You were very polite. Too polite, in fact.
The person that most aggravated me was the lawyer. It was just so creepy.
Oh, Reed Gallagher.
Wouldn't have been a contrast between the lawyer and the city manager. It would have maybe been more aggravated at the city manager, but you couldn't beat a more inhumane person than that lawyer, man. That was for sure.
Yeah, I've had similar experience with him. I encourage you, if they tell you you're obstructing the sidewalk, to say, please specify what you mean by obstructing and how many feet is not obstructing.
Yeah, I definitely will.
Make that clear, because that's something you didn't make clear at the hearing. Because they kept saying, you know, well, you're obstructing the sidewalk. They assumed what was to be proved. They did not give you any indication of what that term meant. And your answer is, you know, you have to give me the definition of what obstructing the sidewalk means, A, in order for me to know how to follow the law, and B, you have to give the police officers a similar orientation, or they won't know what the proper way to ticket someone is. So neither of those things has been given out in the ordinance, and of course you probably won't get it either. But
what's beautiful about this, if you are a person of my persuasion who basically thinks the laws are created to defend the rich against the rest of the people and to continue to maximize their power and income, and it's not really, sadly, to do anything. It's the whole idea that it's equal under the law and all that kind of stuff is clearly, over 40 years of me doing this, complete and utter nonsense. And, you know, and it's made up. It's just off the top of, you know, it's about whatever works to kind of suppress free speech, to suppress people's rights, to make sure that people in power stay in power.
And I agree with you. You know, I agree with you. I agree with you, Keith. I'm going to have to, though, kind of cut it off here because we have to be rolling along. And any final words?
Well, as we speak today, and which we'll know the outcome of by the time of the broadcast, the most recent Funa Bombs group to be harassed is Eureka Funa Bombs, which received a letter demanding that they get a food handler's permit and $2 million liability insurance and all this nonsense. And they're currently meeting with a city councilor about this today, but it looks like they're going to resist in the same ways as Sacramento did when they were being jacked up in a similar way, the same as Tampa, the same as Buffalo last month. And I don't know if it's a summertime thing or a things are collapsing, generally speaking, type thing. I think it's or maybe because Trump is so crazy that even liberal Democrats think they can get away with total nonsense now under the cover of the extreme fake news of the day, or what. But it does seem like in rapid, succession, there's one city going after Funa Bombs after the other. And so they sent a letter demanding all this stuff, and then...
Well, Funa Bombs in Eureka continue to serve free food anyway.
Yeah, and they're saying that they're just going to keep serving it. And actually, I wrote on their Facebook that, you know, you don't need permission to share love and compassion with your community.
I'm going to have to leave it there, Keith, because that's all the time I've got on this recording. But I want to thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Right, there you have it. Okay.
Thank you for doing what you're doing, man. Bye-bye.
Bye.
the brief update from June 4th on this June 8th edition of Bathrobes Piers Broadsides. Coming up now, a flashback to July 17th, 2010. Enjoy. And if you have comments or questions, you can call them in at 423-4833. And within the week or two, I will try to get back to you if I'm up to it. 423-4833. The issue that you raised earlier, and I'm sorry to be so narrowly focused. I'd like to focus on the narrow issues, and I think the broad perspective is important, too, Linda, what you're talking about.
It does play a role here, a very crucial role.
Of course it does, but the issue that we were talking about that I was kind of focusing on was, and that Linda brought up, is, well, what about these laws being selectively enforced? Is that happening? And I think that generally the police, they do choose to selectively enforce it against certain individuals that the city has chosen to make examples of. I mean, you see this not just with the sleeping ban, but Wes Modes, who I think you were telling me is coming up for trial. He's one of the workers, one of the co-founders of the Sub Rosa Cafe, a local cafe that has a lot of literature about anarchism in it and provides free coffee and actually refuge for homeless people, although they have just their disputes with them. He's involved with the Gorilla Drive-In, which provided free movies. He was a supporter of the lead person in the Trash Orchestra, which is a sort of a musical percussion group that kind of supported reoccupation of the right of the public to be in public spaces, such as the drum circle when it was at the farmer's market before it was driven away from there. And he was one of the originators of the DIY parade years ago in 2005, the do-it-yourself New Year's parade. And now he is actually being threatened with jail in a case coming up. You were telling me on the 16th of July, I guess.
Yeah, Mergium, is that how it's said?
Mergium
Motion. On July 16th.
Mergia motion is interesting. Mergia motion, as you know, is a motion that claims selective enforcement, correct?
That's correct.
It's a hard motion to prove. You and I, Ed, were talking about doing it in this upcoming subversive sing-song sidewalk case, which you're defending musician and occasional sleeper and boatsman Robert Blindbear Facer, as he calls himself. You've seen him around town, those of you who get out on the streets. He's a tall guy with a feather in his cap. And
not that tall. Well, he's about 6 feet.
Well, with those feathers.
He looks tall to me. Maybe he's not that tall. But he's kind of all dressed up in these green clothing, and he's has a drum, and he carries a lot of stuff with him, and he's very quiet, very mild-mannered.
Very sweet person, beautiful eyes.
You can find him. You two perhaps might make a... Well,
no, I didn't say anything like that. Not there, Robert. Don't be so adolescent.
Certainly not. Well, I got to outgrow it. What can
I mean,
do
it somewhere else.
No. But anyway, if you want to meet some of these folks, you can come down to Peace Camp 2010, which is still happening. I guess it's happening. It's still happening every night. I know, Ed, you've had to kind of slightly take a back seat here because you've got law cases you have to pursue, and you're an aging guy. You can't sleep. Can't take the concrete. But
I can't get enough sleep in order to practice law during the day. But I am delivering the potty, the porta potty, every night at 8 o'clock.
And that's really an important thing.
Picking it up at 8 a.m.
It's the second porta potty in the city that is actually the second, I call it, bathroom facility that is open in the city of Santa Cruz at night. The first one was opened up by Doug Loisel of the Homeless Service Center when he was executive director. He opened up the bathroom 24 hours a day, and I understand it's still open there, even under Letitia Schwartz, who I believe is the new executive director at the Homeless Services Center. Ed, you have supplied a porta potty. Of course, this may mean all millions of people may come to Santa Cruz for your porta potty. It could have a magnet effect.
Well,
it could produce a lot of shit, Ed. So I don't know. This might not be a good idea. So
I think whatever the response, including the millions or 100,000 or 100 extra people coming to Santa Cruz, the information is invaluable no matter what side of this you're on.
Information
about what?
If
there's that much of a need of a potty at night that one can be swamped because of your radio show and things like the Peace
I was
Camp.
Kidding, Linda.
Oh, I'm not.
Yes. No, I think that the reason that Ed's porta potty is not swamped is because
people don't know
because
yet.
It's only in a position near the county building, and it serves a sort of a campsite area where people are, you know, doing a political protest, and I don't know that anybody has come to the porta potty just to use the porta potty and leave. I haven't heard
they
of anybody.
Last night I saw two people.
Yeah.
You were there. So it has been used that way.
Sure.
And I think it's a great idea, because where else can you go?
You should be everywhere. There should be a porta potty in every freaking corner.
Why? Or maybe even some restrooms.
I know, Linda, when you were head of, the chair of the Homeless Issues Task Force, there was an additional group that was working called the Bathroom Task Force, which Christopher Crone, when he was a council member and mayor, before he had me arrested for dissenting gestures at city council, was working to put in some bathrooms, and they've actually had some porta-potties around town. They had four or five porta-potties that were used until they were taken out under the new regime. Now, I've said all that. What's your reaction to the bathroom situation? How can we get this shit moving?
I don't understand why a town whose primary source of income is tourism doesn't make it easy for people to come visit here, even if it's late at night, or if they're leaving.
We have a caller. Hi there, caller. You're on Free Radio with the Big Four, Chris, Ed, Linda, and Robert.
Hi, Robert. Let's keep me anonymous, but I do want to congratulate Ed for not only providing sleeping that the city could not provide, and I should mention that I heard there was a pregnant woman there that received housing after staying there for
a night or two.
It became more public. You know, maybe we saved a child there that would have been lost under the Rotkin regime solution. And I want also want to congratulate you on the porta potty, because last time we talked, Huff talked to Rodkin, he said it was impossible to have a late-night toilet in Santa Cruz, that in two or three days they get knocked over. But I guess the solution is to have the homeless guarded.
Yeah, that's right. I think the homeless are probably the best guardians. Is it in their interest?
We are pretty zealous of our toilet.
And letting
homeless
people take care of so-called valuable property all over town would be a solution to all this antipathy. It would be one solution all by itself.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, it's just a sign, and you know, and Rodkin says, you know, we need the people to complain about. You know, I'm hearing on the bus that things are worse downtown than they've ever been. They don't feel safe down there anymore, and I think his policies have kind of pushed out the.
I just got one question, man. Now that the mayor's gone, can we smoke pot?
I don't know if you want to broadcast it.
Oh, I don't mind.
You got any?
I'm sorry, this may seem like a sort of a chatty group, but we're actually a radio program, and I'll have to have you arrested if you try smoking any marijuana here in the studio. Unless you have a medical card, in which case, perfectly okay as far as I'm concerned. But anyway, you were saying that, what were you saying, caller?
I kind of forgot.
The right to relieve yourself, I think, is the basic underlying right here.
We're talking about shit.
Yeah, the right to relieve yourself is even more urgent than the right to sleep.
I mean, and even than the right to smoke marijuana, yeah, for sure.
And more dangerous if you don't to your body.
Much fun,
I think the point you made, caller, was that you were present, as was I, when Mike Rotkin was interviewed by Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, a group that was still meeting, and I guess we're supporting this ongoing protest, this ongoing peace camp. He said, we played on Free Radio, his what you just stated, that there couldn't possibly be a group that would have a, you know, that there could be a porta potty set up and it wouldn't work and it would be destroyed or turned over. And I actually, for those who want to hear Mike Rotkin's comments on this, go to www.huffsantacruz.org, and go down till you find the name of my show, Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, and you can go to the descriptions and search for
the 17th of January.
Thank you. Did you say we're 17th of January 2010
yeah,
show?
I'll be playing some snips of it on Tuesday night.
And
say
you
that
on,
again,
on Tuesday night between 7 and 9, you'll be playing
some
snips on your show at January 17th, 2010
and
show.
And we'll hopefully be talking to Ed or anybody at the Peace Camp.
Invited us to that,
but it gets back to the fact that the Rotkin government, the Coonerty style, it just doesn't work. It doesn't provide the services that the homeless need. You know, they talk about all this money they spend, but that money just goes into bureaucrat pockets. It isn't effectively used. Their police force isn't effectively used when they're arresting people that are innocent, when they could just call in and save the time of filling out that form, going to court, testifying. It's just and meanwhile, people are getting shot on the streets. It's just, I think it's a time for a change in government in this town, and I think Ed Fry could be a good solution. Look what he's done already without spending a dime of the public money.
So wait a minute, are you suggesting that Ed Fry waste even more of a time and lose even more sleep by running for shitty council?
What if every neighborhood had a shitter?
it's kind of funny to talk about shitters, but I think it really is a serious problem, when particularly for people who are poor and outside, and for the rest of us too, for those who like to do, you know, are concerned about the environment. I mean, do you want piss and your flowers?
Brings
and
up. is that, oh, if we let the homeless stay here, they'll be pooping and peeing on our yards. You know, well, the reason they're doing that is because Mayor Rockin and Neil Coonerty aren't putting in porta potties for them.
Well, they did. The city did try that, but, you know, they were pretty stinky. It's like they didn't realize, oh, we need three here and four there. Instead, they took them out. They wanted them to fail, obviously.
Actually, in my understanding is that there were porta potties that were put in order as a sort of a stopgap measure before they were going to build some restrooms. And they never built the restrooms. They've had various proposals, like they have the idea of a self-cleaning restroom they have in San Francisco, but that apparently is funded by advertising, and the merchants didn't like the idea of placing it anywhere, so it never got placed. And the porta-potties were removed, I think, at the instigation of the police department and the redevelopment agency and the Parks and Rec, one of those three agencies. I've never found the porta-potties particularly stinky. Did you, Linda, when you were around?
Well, I'm a pretty sensitive girl, but, yeah, the one over by Wells Fargo, the parking lot beside Wells Fargo and that United Artists Theater, it had so much use. It was always awful.
Oh, yeah, it was always awful.
That's a problem identified could be a problem solved.
Well, that means they should service it more often. Basically, gets back to,
more
governance that we have in this town.
Yeah, and so you're urging Ed to run. You, of course, are going to fund him with a $15,000 kind of kickoff.
Well, look what he's done already with very minimal funding. I don't think he needs funding.
Well, he does. If you want him on the council, we got to all get behind him.
Well, and my thought, of course, is, as I've said before in these city council races, is it's good to have people running and speaking on these issues. I think, Ed, you spoke not merely to the limited free radio audience, but you also spoke to KSBW. We had KSBW's TV here in the studio.
We invited them to this peace camp, by the way.
And they were invited to the peace camp, which everyone else is, by the way. That's, by the way, in case you don't know, you just tune in and you're interested. Kerbucker Chris is trying to hog the mic, or I should say, trying to stop me from hogging the mic. All right, well, go ahead.
The guy sent me down here, and they're counting on me. This one?
Hey, kudos to KION and their early and careful coverage.
I was just going
to
say, the location of the peace camp is...
Okay, the location of the peace camp, 2010, folks, is right in front of the courthouse on the courthouse steps. We're basically the protest, you know what, is going on 24/7 at this point. So there are people there all the time, but the shitter and the sanitation facilities and the food and everything is really focused on a period of time from 8 p.m. till 8 a.m. So come on down. I encourage everybody to come and either visit or spend a night with us if you can. And you don't have to be homeless. We've had a lot of folks who are completely in homes and whatnot. Come on down. Certainly, if you are homeless and you're in the sound of my voice, please come to us. We will find a safe, clean place for you to lay your head and sleep for as long as we can hold out down at the courthouse. We have a blog and a website if you'd like to visit and follow the adventures of Peace Camp 2010. It's located at peacecamp2010.blogspot.com, and we are accepting donations of food and blankets. Right now we'd like to just limit it to that, if you could, please. And the food, we'd like to ask everybody to bring pre-prepared food, not bags of groceries. We're not doing a food bank down there, and we're not prepared to handle it. And please find somebody responsible to accept the donation. Don't drop it on the sidewalks and drive away, because we've had that problem already, too. All right.
Let me say thanks about the food donations so far.
Yes.
Joseph Schultz of India Joe's, which, by the way, is going to be reopening very shortly on Front Street, brought two really wonderful meals the first two nights. And then on the three nights after that, Sarah Ringler brought some wonderful home-cooked stuff. I mean, just great stuff.
She's the meat pie lady.
So thanks to Joseph Schultz and Sarah Ringler for that.
Burritos.
Thanks for anything else you want to say.
Also, Carl brought a cake, and she did make the flag as well, the Betsy Ross.
There you go.
Peace flag.
Anarchic revolution here down at the courthouse. I'd also like to mention that could be for anyone. Maybe a tourist coming to town, there is parking there. You can sleep out in your car. Not just the homeless. This is available to any American citizen, you know, as it should be. The land should be free and available
for
everyone.
Right on.
Yeah, sleep in your car in the county parking lot. Apparently, it's treated as legal, which it is.
So far. The county and its building keepers are being accepting of the situation.
A little more compassionate than the city.
Much more, I would say.
Here.
And I think, you know,
I think there's a lot to be explored in that, too. It's too bad we don't have about 10 hours to run this show because, you know, the fact that they have made, for whatever reasons in their mind, could be malevolent even. I mean, I'm not saying they're on our side by any stretch of the imagination, but the fact that they have made a choice to temporarily allow us, me and Ed and the rest of us, to open this space, so to speak, and to open this place that's happening, this thing that's happening, it's hugely indicative of a rift, I think, between the county and the city of something to be exploited. And the other thing is, too, is that once the sanctuary is granted, it's going to be awfully difficult for the county to justify coming in there with Blackfoot authority and kicking us all down and kicking us all out at this point. At this point, they've got no choice but to either talk to us or tolerate us. And what that means to you folks out there, again, I repeat, is that we have created a safe sanctuary. We have created a crack in the system here where, for our own means, I will admit that I have my own reasons for doing this. There is an agenda here, and the agenda is to get this onerous bans overturned and so that we can sweep and travel across our land in peace and sweep upon the land. And I agree with, and I guess we're Mr. Anonymous out there today, and he knows because we've talked at length, that I agree with more than anything, Ed, as the man that I am, and you've met me and talked to me for a while, more than anything, what means to me is the right to travel across my land and to sleep upon it out in the open. This has been my whole lifestyle for my whole life. This is all I've done, and I love my life. Okay,
it's what the pioneers did originally in America.
That's right, and there's no room for the rugged individualist in these laws, and this is what really goes up my butt sideways, is that I don't ask anybody for anything. I try to take as few services from this city as I can, even though I'm a registered voter, I live here, I'm entitled to any service the city offers, but I don't take them. I like to live on my own, I like to manage my own affairs. And all I'm asking for is that when my backpack gets too heavy for me and I find myself down on the levee way, I should be able to drop it next to a tree, lay down, and go to sleep. Who am I harming? You know what I mean? Who does that harm? People love to see it. You know, Mike thinks that the tourists hate to see us out there. You know how many tourists
it's
and yuppies come up to me?
And the neighbor folks.
That's
that
right. You know how many
about.
Yuppies and tourists and whatnot come up to me and shake my hand and say, you know,
yeah.
Man, I wish I could do what you're doing. I really wish I could just throw a pack on my back and go really see the world, you know, up close and personal, you know, and you know, and they're very generous. These tourists that are supposedly so repelled by us, they fatten our hats. Those of us who fly hats, and you know, you've seen me out there on the avenue. What I do for a living, I fly a hat and I beg alms, man. What others would call a bum, I guess, or spare changing, but as I think of it, as a professional beggar of alms. And you know, guess what? Those tourists come from halfway around the world just to get pictures taken with the really cool Santa Cruz bums and throw a 20 spot in my hat, you know, So apparently they're not as turned off by the presence of poor people. And this idea that there's going to be a poor person quota, that somehow Santa Cruz has taken on its limit of poor people and the doors are shut, that's just a fucking load of bullshit.
I'll tell you what.
I think they should limit the millionaires to no more than 2,000. If the homeless people got to be limited to 2,000, then there should be no more than 2,000 millionaires allowed in the city of Santa Cruz. We will do all kinds of laws. We'll close all the fancy department stores that they shop because that would just attract them like a magnet, and the more gaps we open and the more jewelry stores, the more they're going to come, and we'll close the Ferrari dealership, he's got to go, you know, and no more McMansions up on the Sunset District, and that's the best way to get them guys out of town, you know. It's, you know, this whole idea that somehow we are aesthetically unpleasing, that we are a quota, that we are a problem to be solved. There is no problem to be solved here. There are multiple problems to be solved. Millionaires are having just as many personal problems right now somewhere in this city. Yes, we are.
Santa Cruz,
you know,
is an attraction for the wealthy.
People,
you know,
are going to change whether they're ready or not. Things are changing in their world. They're going to change.
I'm in charge now. Look at this. There's a new sheriff in town. What do you want to do for it? Hey, call in.
Here.
What's our listener line number, man?
Hey,
anybody know
what my...
That's right. We're in charge. The monkeys have taken over the studio, folks. The homeless people have occupied. We can bolt them out even if we want. I've done it before. I've locked them out of the studio before. Our call-in number, I believe...
Well, you can't do a sleep in there, though.
Hey, what's our call-in number,
now.
Mr. Anonymous? 427-3772? Is that
it?
Yeah,
but I'm on it. I'd have to...
All right. Well, that's all right. Just stay. I don't say you got to get off in it, but call us up if you got something you want to say. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, of course.
course, call us up at 427-3772. If you want to support the station, and I want to just say a word about this station, because in the last few months we've come under siege. The Mike Rockin, Mayor Rockin, who I didn't get a chance to address this issue with, was kind enough to call the federal government for assistance and ask the FBI if they'd be kind enough to invade and put these local activists in their place. They've done that, and as I predicted, 2 days after he made the call, announced in the paper that he made the call, the feds showed up with the wagon. It took them about 11 days to get the wagon here to town and find the transmitter for Free Radio Santa Cruz and begin to cause this problem. So we're already a target. We are the only outlet for free speech in Santa Cruz right now. And so if this station falls, we lose a huge, huge tool in battling these people. So visit the radio station website and find out how you can support Free Radio Santa Cruz. It's located at www.freakradio.org. Call us in. I keep bummed I can't use your name because I'm going to be on your show on Tuesday. This is Free, and he's a regular broadcaster on Free Radio Santa Cruz. And thanks for calling in. Thank you.
All right. The number again is 427-3772.
And call us up and let us know what you think.
All right. Keep up the good work.
Thank you very much. Ed, I'd like to just have a little bit of a dialogue with Ed here. We've been through a bunch here, and I told you last night when we talked about this, the same tired claptrap that, honest to God, I could have actually sat in his chair and played his part. Address some. How do I do?
See if this picking that didn't work.
Speakerphone.
Well, we can talk while we find the.
All right, somebody say something while I push buttons here.
Oh, I have an idea. I didn't get to.
There we go.
You got it. Can I let
sort
out?
Of. I killed it. I don't have a direct question. What do you think of all this, and what does it strike you? How are we going to change an implacable dude like him? Isn't the only way to run these guys out of office? I mean,
well, he, along with most of the citizenry, is hypnotized into thinking that we've got to conform to the merchants and commerce in generally, and the needs of commerce,
money
above
property.
Everything else. It's a question of priorities, and we're just assuming that there's nothing can be done about the present economy.
Have you made a decision you're going to run for city council?
I am seriously considering it. I probably will run, but I'm not going to announce that.
If you do run, will you accept an endorsement from the Downtown Merchants Association?
No, that wouldn't be helpful at all.
How about the administration of UCSC?
I don't want any financial contributions.
No,
I don't want
what
any
about
endorsements? I don't want endorsements. What I want is to come together and reason together.
I just wanted to get out of the table, because this is my problem with the politicians that are going to run, is that many of them will accept those endorsements, and those are our enemies.
Endorsements, the whole concept of endorsements is so manipulable that it doesn't do any good to say, well, we're for him, and this group is for him, and that group's for him. That people should think for themselves and not say, well, who else agrees with him? You know, think for yourself, and then you don't endorse me. Go out and vote for me. Go out and campaign. Go out and talk to people. You talk to your neighbor, talk to your friends, your lovers, whatever, about what's going on. But, you know, I don't. This the whole thing about endorsements is a charade.
It's kind of like carrying a bunch of calling cards in your pocket. Only some people can manipulate that into seeming like creating their own image out of that.
Yeah.
But it's a habit. It's like the very status quo that we want to breathe life into our dissolve.
I want to take a moment just to cement the two points that I made so that we both, all of us, remember them and can hold Mike's feet to these fires. And one of them, of course, my questions was the hate crime issue. Personal to me. I was attacked. I called like they asked me to do, and I did all the right things. I made the report, and I'm still waiting. And I haven't been talked to by a detective. I wasn't shown any pictures of local thugs. Nothing was done to investigate what I believe is hate crime. I think his answer was disingenuous. The prosecutor decides whether or not it's a hate crime, but long before then, the police decide whether or not it warrants to be investigated at that level to gather the evidence necessary for a hate crimes conviction. And so I thought it was just a bunch of bullshit, and I don't believe I'll get the answers I want, because what I want is to be treated the same way the theoretical rabbi that I mentioned, who gets attacked in a similar fashion for his
boys, now we're equal, according to the California state legislature. According to them, we're equal footing now, and we are a protected class right along with, you know, religion or gays or anybody else. And I don't feel any extra protected from my one incident. And I this is personal to me. I worked very hard for that cause last summer and gathered a lot of evidence, got a lot of people to write the state legislature to get that class enacted. And the other point that I made that, you know, will he come down to Peace Camp 2010? Mm-hmm. An open and honest invitation. I personally guarantee his safety. He would be fine down there. Will he come down and speak to us? And what's your thoughts on that, Ed?
Yeah, my mind was a little wandering. Who come down and speak?
The mayor. We personally invited him to come visit us to meet the people that these laws are affecting.
Well, I hope he does. I doubt whether he will, but maybe he will. He's more open than most.
And what about the hate crimes issue? Do you think that anybody in the city heard my voice tonight and realized that, you know, that this should be treated a little bit more seriously because we worked very hard for this?
Well, I think the listeners of this station probably heard you and will seriously consider it. Although it's, you know, it's a limited audience in numbers, but
do you think the mayor will take any action on that? Do you think that hate crimes against homeless people will receive any higher priority than they did yesterday?
I doubt it.
I can't see that they have the capacity to even do that if there was the personal will among them.
You don't think that if there was an attack on a synagogue here in this city that they wouldn't drop everything immediately and dedicate whatever resources they needed to?
Yeah, I think they probably would.
Well, what's the difference according to the main state? According to California state legislature, there is no difference anymore.
Right.
Between the attack on me and an attack on a synagogue, so.
We can see by the very nature and particulars inside the camping ban that this city feels pretty insulated in its lawmaking, that it doesn't have to really fit it into the
bigger picture.
Body of
but
law.
It is hard for Mike Rockin to tout a ACLU credentials and whatnot when, you know, he won't even help one homeless guy get one documented hate crime. I got a case number and everything in my pocket now.
Are you going to talk to him, or are you going to deal with the system the way it works for everyone? Or have you decided?
Well, I called. I did talk to him. I'm waiting. No,
I don't mean on the radio. You need to call.
Well, whatever. I just shook his hand out there too and asked him. You know, so I mean, whatever. I mean, you know, I mean, that's why I wanted to bring these out. Not so much that there was a debate here to talk about. Just I want to cement them in my mind and the listeners' minds and the record of the show that we're keeping. So that those are my two points. And one of the things that Robert always accuses Mike of, and I agree with him on this, is that he's very good at giving half-assed answers. And very, very weak on going back out there and producing any kind of, you know, yeah, we'll look into it. And that never gets, you know, nothing ever gets looked into. And so so I'd like to personally test that by I put a couple points that I thought were very fairly serious. I mean, if you're the victim of a hate crime, you may not think it's serious. You may think it's funny. Ah, look at that. A skinhead beats up a bum on the mall. Big deal, right? But it's not funny if you're the victim, you know, of that attack.
One time I saw somebody in a Volkswagen pull out a handgun and shoot at people gathered under the town clock who had signs up about against the Matrix when it was passed in San Francisco. It was in the middle of the night, and there were only about 20, 25 of us there. And some guy walks by and shoots off a pistol. I don't know if he was aiming at a person or not, but I'll tell you, it tightened my parts.
Well, it will. And I mean, gunshots go off regular on the levee way every night. Those of us who sleep on the river bottom certainly know the sound of gunshots. We know the approach of crunching footsteps on the gravel, wondering, is it a cop? Is it a guy that's going to hit me in the head with a stick and take my belongings? Is it a rapist? Is it, you know, and those are the kinds of things. That, oh, sure, it's easy for Mike to say, go run off and hide on the river bottom. Just hide. You know what I mean?
Well, there are alternatives, hide out or get out.
Yeah, exactly.
Good choice.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, that's reasonable, right?
Yeah.
It's all very fucking reasonable, but that's, you know, it's not a solution.
So you're tuned to free, Radio, 101.1 FM and www.freakradio.org. And I'm going to interject myself back into the proceedings. I was called away
by the media.
I had to have my picture taken.
No, I did it before you.
Did you win the debate? What did they think?
I don't know. We didn't hear from them. But in any case, with about an hour left in the show, for those who would like, I want to announce Jillian Greenside, who was thinking of calling in, and will be talking in hopefully a future show very shortly about the low rape closure rate of the Santa Cruz Police Department in Santa Cruz people are not arrested in rape cases in Santa Cruz. There's a much smaller or lower rate of arrests in Santa Cruz than elsewhere in the state, according to Jillian. And she was Mike Rutkin's appointee to the Commissioner for the Prevention of Violence Against Women, but he refused to reappoint her apparently when her stats ran a little counter to what he was learning from the police department.
When she made this rape issue, the fact that the police department isn't dealing with this issue, rape and sexual assault, the way they were trained to do in the past. They are dealing with it in a way that allows their personal sympathies to enter into their judgment. And that's what she was trying to bring up on that commission and at the city at the time. Because there were more rapes. There were way more rapes all of a sudden. There were more than in San Jose per capita. And, you know, nobody wanted to hear it.
Well, the fact that her numbers came up different than Mike Rutkin's, I think, it highlights something that we saw here today in the debate, which is Mike claiming different numbers and you, Robert, climbing all over him for difference of statistics and numbers. And I think what Mike needs to realize is that when you talk about, take an example, something like police contacts, you know, if a police drives up to you and you're in an alleyway or in a doorway sleeping and he shines a light and whoops the siren really, really loud, scares the fucking bugger Jesus out of you and drives away and doesn't write that down. I don't give a shit what anybody says. He doesn't make a report of that as a contact, but is it a contact? Well, when you're sitting there with piss drubbing down your leg because you were so scared, you know, so surprised by
the whoop,
you know what I mean? And then you got to pack everything up and got to move. You know, to you, that's a contact. To them, that's just them rousting you up out of fucking bed. So.
Like last
true enough.
They come walking through all the sleepers at the courthouse.
You're talking about the deputies, though, not the police. Correct?
Yes.
I'm talking about a pattern of enforcement.
Police enforcement, yeah.
Seeing somebody with a badge and a gun, even if they're just a security guard, is enough to ruin my sleep.
Well, it was funny when he came into the camp, too, because he was obviously on a very short leash, and equally obvious that he was very upset about it. He was one of those cops who really wants to go. He wants to enforce law, and he wasn't going to be allowed to that night, but he had been sent up there and tasked with the task of walking around and shaking each door to make sure we had somehow broke into the courthouse, and then he had to look in every single bush to make sure we weren't in the bushes or the grass, which would have been a violation. Not one single violation after like 20 minutes of walking around the encampment, he walked up and found a single Kleenex and a half a bottle of bottled water sitting smack in the dead center of the main mezzanine there right in front of the courthouse, and he stood over it grimacing, gritting his teeth, grinding his teeth with a flashlight held in his hand, shining down on it like a spotlight, and he just said a single word, trash. And some homeless guy comes up like real timid, like almost on his hands and knees, snatches the two pieces of trash and says, "Very sorry," and runs away and puts it in the trash can, and then he left. And
I think it's interesting. You know, that may show. I mean, I think you put it very well, Chris.
Thank you.
That may show that what they're really looking for is some kind of obeisance to their authority. They want you to and somehow respect their authority in the most profound, subservient sense, and they want you to be afraid, or they want you to be respectful, and your very presence, visible presence, is disrespect because you don't belong. You don't belong. You aren't supposed to be there, and that's the reason for that.
And I understand that the average, especially member of Peace Camp 2010, the average homeless person or street person is. I agree with you. Going to feel that way. Myself being a little bit more gung ho and having a little bit more stripes in the movement and not being quite so intimidated by police, I just found it very, very amusing. I was walking around everywhere he went. I followed him with Ed Fry. Number in one hand, who is acting as our attorney in this case of should they do anything?
You were harassing and shadowing
and
our police department.
And I had a cell phone in the other.
No wonder he was upset.
I carefully followed him. I carefully followed him everywhere around as he made his way around the thing to make sure he didn't actually hassle any of my people. And what I got out of the deal was that this is a cop who really would like to do more. To to police this event and was not going to be allowed to. And I don't know what the reasons are that the county have decided not to force the issue with us down there. But I just want to say I don't give a shit, because what we've done is, for seven nights in a row, we have provided a safe, sound place for people who are, like I said to the mayor, and I've said it to you, Robert, and I'll say it again so everybody understands. When I'm out there in the streets, people are coming up to me, vulnerable people, and we all, sometimes almost with tears in their eyes, and asking me, "We've heard, Chris, that you've got somewhere safe for us to sleep. Tell us what's up." And that's, you know, that's just more telling than I can ever say, and it has emotionally invested me in Peace Camp 2010 in a way that I didn't think was possible. And I will commit to this on the air right now. They will haul me off that front steps of that courthouse in chains. I will not leave until this issue is solved to my satisfaction, not to the local activist satisfaction, not to the, you know, local politician satisfaction, but to the people who have to live with these onerous laws. When we're satisfied that this solution has been found, we will leave the courthouse steps. Until then, you know, just, I thank the county for not busting our chops, but be warned, we are here to stay, and there are some of us at least prepared to go down with the ship.
We being you yourself.
And myself, and others that will remain nameless, who there are other activists with me out there,
you know,
who we talked about it, and we're prepared.
That's an interesting question, because the issue here is, at the last, we had one of these demonstrations before. It was a sleepout, lasted for five nights. That was at the city hall.
And seven nights,
it
baby.
You're ahead of it by at least one or two nights. Maybe it was six nights. I think it was Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday,
Ed broke
Thursday,
my headphones.
Friday. I think it was six nights at the city hall grounds. And this was in 2007, when there was actually a lawsuit being prepared by two attorneys based on the Jones precedent, the federal court's decision in the Los Angeles case, which is now no longer a precedent because it became a settlement, that it was cruel and unusual punishment to harass homeless people when there was no shelter, or when there was clearly inadequate shelter, and that was commonly agreed on. And we were actually kind of training people to say to the police officer, "Can you give me a legal place to sleep?" To write down the name of the police officer, to say, "Please leave me alone," and to have a whole series of sort of the whole dialogue with the police department in that way, to record it, and then to give that to attorneys later as an indication of harassment, so there could be later be financial consequences to the police harassment. That didn't go where we wanted it to go, but the reason I'm mentioning that is, I would like this to make just to learn from the errors of our previous, or the experience, not necessarily the errors of our previous encampment. And I wasn't there; I was only there one night. I was sort of a liaison, and I was doing tabling, and I was doing some writing about it. But I've been at this peace camp every night, and slept overnight every night except the last night out there. Although admittedly, sometimes in my car. But I've noticed problems that do come up in the encampment. And some have suggested this will down the encampment. I think Rotkin suggested.
I suggest just the opposite. I would suggest that this proves our fucking point. You know.
Well, let me say what the problems are.
Right, well, yeah.
And the problems are the internal conflicts between people in the camp, which are actually, people are pretty much united on the notion, here's a place I can fucking get some sleep. Thank God, for a little while, as you said.
Yeah, and that's really right. A point.
But
for
there's
a lot of them.
But that in fact becomes the difficult point too, when others come and say, we're going to dance around, we're going to get drunk. And there are a few people like that at the encampment. And the issue becomes, how do you deal with a population which includes folks who are very upset with authority generally? You don't want to hear the authority of anybody, whether it's the peace camp or the police or the restaurant down the street, you know, or the boss, because they have been treated badly, and they don't want to just been told, you can't do this.
Well, I'll answer that question. It'll be as an emissary of Peace Camp 2010, I'll officially answer it. And here's our answer to that. This is the gritty reality. These are the people who need the help. Do we have, down at Peace Camp 2010, folks who are, perhaps, shall we say, having various mental disabilities? Yes, we do. Do we have alcoholics? Yes, we do. Do we have junkies? Oh, my God, yes, we do. And guess what? Real people living real lives, doing real things. Are there conflicts when you can take those, the group of people I just described, and confine them to a 100 by 100, say, foot piece of cement? you know, it's very confined up there. We're limited to where we can sweep up there.
Yeah,
so we're sweeping
the lawns,
side by
the lawns are covered.
Right.
Are wet.
That's right.
The lawns are wet down with sprinklers.
Right. Now I would submit this question. I would submit this question. If we were to gather how many, let's say it take 25 as an average number of what we've had down there. If we were to take 25, anybody else in Santa Cruz, any other person, regardless rich or poor, and put them in a similar situation, bring them down to the courthouse, give them sleeping bags, and make them sleep down. You can take anybody, 25 at random, from rich to poor, working class, housed, whatever, cops, and put them down there. You're going to have personality disputes. You're going to have folks that are going to haggle and going to argue.
I think that folks in houses would be even worse because they have more of a sense of entitlement.
I think they
and
would.
They don't understand.
The ones that have come down to visit us, we have to actually tell them not to piss on the trees. I mean, you know, we got a pisser over here, you know. I mean, those are the ones we have to actually explain how to sweep out. I think the problems have been very, very minimal. I personally think that they've been dealt with to my satisfaction. There's been no violence. There's been, no incidences of rape or robbery or anything like that. I think we're doing the best we can. Is it a tough task? I won't lie to you. Sure it is. You know, to put that many people together, that close together, and get everybody to get along. But I think what we've done at Peace Camp 2010 is to try to keep people closely focused on why we're there, and that's to provide people with a good, safe, sanitary place 12 hours a night to lay their head. We have I counted four this morning. When I did a little bit of a survey talking to some people, I counted four people that are sleeping with us that have full-time jobs. They are getting up every morning to their alarm clock and going off to work and then coming back to sleep with us. They are not housed people. They are homeless workers. Okay? They are homeless people who are working 9-to-5 jobs and still cannot afford a place to live, for whatever reason, cannot get into housing.
What kind of jobs are we talking about?
Including gentrification.
I would just roughly off the top of my head, two of them I don't know. One of them's a restaurant worker, and one of them's a convenience store clerk. So and they're with us. They're staying with us, and they wish to remain anonymous. So I'm not going to give out any names, so we have the whole gambit. We have pregnant folks, you know, a pregnant lady, as Free I think mentioned. We had we've had many disabled, very badly physically disabled people in wheelchairs and elderly people in walkers that have come to us. Especially last night, we bedded a bunch of them down in a separate space so that they could be away from the wing nuts and everything.
A lady recovering from surgery last night who was really having a hard time.
God bless her.
Got some sleep.
She did. She got some rest. And you worked hard on that, on getting her some sanctuary within the sanctuary. So we do the best we can, Robert, to answer your question. And is it difficult? Yes. But is it impossible? No. If one guy like me can sit there all night, like last night, the activists all decided they needed a rest, right? So they all
fled.
They all kind of left. And but I was good with that. And you know what? I sat there all night, and Wenda was with me, and you know, it wasn't that bad. We got through it. You know what I mean? It's life on the streets, I'll grant you, and it can be kind of gritty, but does it have any impact whatsoever on the message we're trying to get across? No. If anything, as I said at the beginning, it emphasizes our point that this is the reason we need safe places, so that we can, you know, folks shouldn't be forced to sleep with drunkards or heroin addicts or the people that are causing the minimal amount of trouble that is being caused down there. They shouldn't be forced to have to do that. Right now they are being forced, even within our sanctuary. They're being forced by necessity to sleep with these folks. If we had a sanctuary, or a legal sanctuary, a big sanctuary, people would have somewhere to go to put distance between themselves and those sorts of issues, and that wouldn't be a problem. You know what I mean? Because they actually, the ones who are disruptive like to hang out with each other and disrupt each other more than they want to disrupt us. So if you had space, if you had a true sanctuary and a true space, and this problem was solved.
It's kind of like a wet camp, as they do at the Rainbow Gathering, that sort of thing.
Sure, exactly.
Which means a camp where people were drunks and drug users can, you know, are sort of not necessarily confined, but encouraged to go to.
Well, I've long advocated to what I would call, and it's my own kind of invention, so I don't really have a name for it, but what I'd like to call free asylums, where what I envision is places to go where there would be mental health workers, and it would be an open-ended deal. You could go in there if you wanted to be a part of the system. You could go in and give your name, and you'd get your meds delivered out to you and get services that way. Or if you wanted to go in 100% anonymous, you didn't want to take a single fucking med, you don't want to see a single friggin' doctor, all you want is you're schizophrenic and you're having a spell and you want to lay down and rest your head, you'd have a place to do that. Those among the community who are mentally challenged and disabled who are somewhat together. Many of them are together enough to be able to handle themselves. They would work as a security so that people would feel that they, even in that much, they were being policed by their own. And that is the way to invite these folks off the streets and keep them completely separate from every other problem. This is theirs. This is their place. This is the poor screaming lady that freaks Becky out so much that comes through every night. This is her place to go and fucking scream. And if we did something like that, and then, like you said, at wet camp, we solved these problems individually with places for these folks to go.
You know, and I love to hear the positive focus on this, but I guess another time I'll be bringing up the negative focus, which is, you get a lot of friction from people who get very upset when people come through and are screaming, and they've only got one place to go and sleep, and this is their place to go and sleep, and they suddenly get, I'm going to beat the person, I'm going to over the head with a metal pipe. I get so pissed, you know.
I'm not minimizing the problem, but all I'm saying is this to me shows how badly we need to solve this problem. You know, the fact that it's this difficult, you know, in a sense to deal with the various communities that we have living on the streets shows that we need to start, you know, giving people places to go who have these individual problems.
And I also noticed, though, and this is what kind of inspires me, is that I was there, you know, for 5 nights I was there, or 6 nights actually, I guess it was 6 nights. And I'm both. We've been discouraged in terms of watching this situation where, you know, there's mounting tension between people who don't want to see people come in and disturb their sleep because they damn well want to be able to sleep and have somebody partying and yelling and shouting and jumping around and dancing in the middle of the night and throwing stuff around. This can become, you know, the cue for let's beat this guy up, let's throw him out. And yet, that, although there have been people who have been, you know,
that's been advocated, and I know the fellow, and I know the incident. We're not going to name names. I don't want to shame or embarrass anybody, but I know what you're talking about. And the thing with that is that is a problem that I have found over time solves itself. One of two things is going to happen, and I'm not going to name his name, so I'll just call him the crazy guy. So eventually, the crazy guy is either going to get the shit beat out of him somewhere else besides the protest, because people are pretty respectful of that turf and not bringing violence there, or he's going to wander off on his own because he's not very well loved there. Let's face it, crazy guy is not well liked right now, especially by those, like I said, especially the working class homeless who are trying to actually work a job and sleep there in the courthouse steps are very, very dissatisfied with that. That problem is getting better. I think it was better last night. I think these issues have a way of resolving themselves, but only if you have determined, savvy, and I believe, you know, experienced activists. Myself, I've done a number of these actions where we reclaim public space, and I am used to the kind of folks that is going to be drawn to this sort of a thing. And so I think a much thicker skin than a lot of folks down there have for this sort of action.
Is there a core of people who are coming back? I mean, the activists, I'm one of them, are kind of crapping out, and we're tired, you know. I mean, we're willing to put in some energy. Ed's going to come back with a porta potty every morning and every night and pick it up every morning, and I'll show up and, you know, wander around with my tape recorder and do interviews. But, you know, those of us who have been staying there may not choose to stay there. I mean, Linda, your health is not very good. You've been there a couple nights or one night.
Yeah, the nights in between was because I caught a cold the first time.
You know, and so I've always thought realistically, I've had the kind of the gloomy sense, well, unless you have a core of people committed to this to begin with, it's not going to work. But I think now that perhaps out of this situation, because it produces all kinds of new understandings of people, things happen at this protest, people are exposed to each other in ways that induce both a kind of mutual need and concern and also hope.
Well, there is a question in there, and I'd be glad to answer it.
Breaks up the isolation. That's so important for many homeless people that have to camp and sleep outside. They become so isolated, it's hard to even think straight.
Well, there is a question in there. I'll go ahead and answer it. Is there an element in the protest? And yes. I don't want to give numbers because, you know, a lot of this I just don't want to give. I don't want to tip our hand too much. But there is a core group down there that are prepared to go down with the ship. And the commitment that I gave earlier would be applicable to those individuals. There are certain individuals, not everyone, not by far anyone, in fact, everyone. But there are there is a core of individuals down at the courthouse at Peace Camp 2010 right now that will leave those steps in chains or with a solution. So if that answers your question, we're here to stay. We've asked Ed. We've asked Ed, and we've met with Ed, and he's committed.
I'm glad to hear that.
He's committed to sanitation facilities, you know. And so as long, and that I've always insisted within the activist community, I've always insisted that that's a cornerstone. I will not be there when the ecology breaks down from a lack of sanitation. Mm-hmm. So as long as the sanitation remains, then there are a few of us at least who are prepared to hold the line, hold the fort, police what needs policing, do what needs doing, and in the end, if it comes to it, if they come for us, to go down with the fort.
And now I'm going to say something that's a little unpopular or a little bit, to me, kind of experimental, and this is something I've seen the last couple of nights. There is an obsession in America with policing and control and following rules and regulations and so forth that I think a lot of homeless people are really hostile to. And for good reason, because they have suffered the consequences of unjust rules and are suffering the consequences.
That's why we've adopted one rule.
Even as we speak. What happens, you know, is there another way in a peace camp like this, in a very confined, kind of almost not a pressure cooker, because it's not quite that, but it is a very limited space, as you pointed out, and there are some real priorities for most people, which is the right just to sleep, to go to sleep, and so they can get up in the morning and go to work or do whatever they need to do, recover their sanity, because you need sleep for sanity. When the tensions that result, when a problem comes up, is there another way? The temptation is to say, you can't do this. We have 14 rules here. You're violating rule 14A, no violence, no drugs, no alcohol. The response can be to create a real situation of conflict, or alternately to have an authoritarian structure where there's a kind of a thuggery that happens
that is
unwanted. I mean, I saw this happen in Camp Paradise. I've seen it happen at the Homeless Service Center. Is there another way to go?
There is. One of the dangers with these take back public space movements, they all are in a way they all have sort of the same pattern, which is kind of funny. But in these take back your open space movements, you will have a pattern that is pretty predictable, and. One of the biggest dangers in trying to get a movement like this off the ground and get it to flourish is the tendency to over define it. And overregulate it. And that's what I cautioned at Peace Camp 2010. And I think what we've agreed upon down there now is a situation where we're going to try to keep it as simple and basic as possible. We're there to overturn the sleeping ban. Our way of doing that is to sleep, which is really just, you know, kind of about as basic as you can get. And the one rule that I've adopted and will enforce with whatever thuggery you might want to mention, I'm a pretty tough guy, and I do have a reputation both at the peace camp and on the streets of Santa Cruz of, let's just say, being able to hold my own. And the one rule we will enforce is that you will treat your brother, the man next to you as your brother. And the woman next to you is your sister. And if we do that, we've got it right there, folks. We will succeed. And if we don't, then we're going to lose it. And it's that simple. And that can happen, too. Will it happen? Maybe. I don't know. But we've got it there in a nutshell. If we treat each other the way we would treat our own family, then we will succeed.
Let me add...
this is Ed Fry, who's the attorney who's actually providing the porta potty and who's doing a lawsuit, or I should lawsuit, defending an individual who's accused of sleeping and taking that case to appeal. Go ahead, Ed.
What I want to emphasize, not only at the peace camp but everywhere, is nonviolence. And when I say nonviolence, I mean not just avoiding physical fisticuffs and all that, but avoiding insults to people, avoiding using calling people names, and sure, everybody has a right to criticize what other people do, but to call another person, you know, some ugly epithet, and then expect them to go on listening to you is foolish. You turn people off immediately if you start calling them names. So being nonviolent means includes not just avoiding physical fights, but it also means nonviolence. Psychologically, and using language that will open people up, open their minds rather than close their minds, because we're not going to convince the powers that be of anything if we start calling them names.
And you're really talking not so much about the internal process, although I'm sure it applies to the camp too,
but yes.
You're talking about the appearance outside. Now, let me ask you about that. Now, you saw the debate that I got into a somewhat fevered exchange with Mayor Rotkin, and actually all three, two of you said, Robert, you know, you're getting carried away here. I mean, did you feel that I was being abusive to the mayor?
Well, I think abusive of the time.
I think that I'll answer that question. I think that you have a long and illustrious relationship with Mike Rotkin, and I don't think Mike expected any better or worse, and neither did I, to be honest with you. What I expected. And we
have a phone call. Did you finish your answer?
No, I didn't finish. You weren't giving him a chance to answer the question is what I was objecting to.
Okay, we have a call. Let's take the call. And caller, you'll be on the air in just a moment. I just want to apologize.
I want to off air.
Hang on a second. You want to be off air. Okay, hang on. We'll put you off air.
She's got a dead battery.
Let's see what's up here. We'll get you off air, and while you're off air, we can perhaps, Ed, you can talk a little bit about... I don't know what's coming up next this week in terms of any legal cases. I guess there's the sinister sidewalk citation stuff. We want to talk a little bit about what that's all about.
Yes, those violent criminals who were accused of singing on behalf of the homeless, singing on the mall.
Yeah, that's dangerous stuff.
Yeah. Oh, they're scumbags. Can we just take them out back and shoot them in the head? I don't understand why that's not a viable solution.
You and Miguel Balderas are big into these violent solutions. Ed, I think you should talk to this guy about this violent.
Where
rhetoric.
I come.
Well, his tongue is planted in his cheek.
We just shoot him.
Yeah, I suppose so.
We just shoot him. We don't worry about scumbags like them homeless people, man. We just shoot him.
I do want to apologize, by the way, for the phones apparently being blocked or off. I had promised at 11 o'clock we would have phones on, lines on after Mike left the studio.
Everybody remain calm. The show's almost over.
You know, actually, we have another 40 minutes of the show. So if you want to call in and comment on anything you've heard, we do actually have phone lines open, 427-3772. Still in the studio, endlessly patient, our Kerbugger Chris, Linda LeMaster, and Ed Fry, who are here, as am I.
I'd like to hear from the community, if they're out there, if anybody does want to call in. I'd like to hear people's ideas on having Ed Fry, who we've been listening to this last few hours, if you've tuned in, call us up and tell us what you think about the idea of Ed running for city council. I mean, I know how we all feel about that sitting in this room, but I'd like to hear what the community's got to say after having a chance to hear Ed and hear the counterpoint with Mayor Rotkin. What do you think about getting this man elected? I personally, you know, like I said, I'll save my thoughts, but
427-3772 is the call-in number, and we actually have somebody here who has run for city council and almost won, Linda LeMaster. But before you answer, Linda, I'm afraid the callers get precedence. My apologies.
Well, while you were picking it up, I could have said something.
Well, you know it is.
See?
Hey there, you're on Free Radio with Linda, Ed, Robert, and me. No, I'm Robert. Chris and me. Go ahead. Hello.
Yes, I would like to say that I suffered some police abuse in the past, and I was homeless. Then when I was homeless, I was raped, and I was wondering if there was a safe place that could be a permanent place when someone is homeless, not because of their own actions, but because of the deprivation of depriving the written law to the citizens of the United States.
Let me ask you, did this happen to you when you were sleeping outside as a consequence of not being able to, you know, sleep in a well-lighted area, or were you afraid from, did you feel you had to hide from the police, and did you report it to the police at the time, that sort of thing?
Well, I reported it to the police, and the police came to my door when I was indoors.
You were indoors, yeah.
I was at the time. I was a resident at the indoors. The police came and without a warrant, kicked my door in, and then I was taken in a 5150 because they didn't want to believe the rape that occurred to me. So I was victimized by rape, and then victimized again by the police. And because of the police's actions, I was homeless for 10 years.
Now this incident.
Then I had a job, and then my job I was discriminated against.
Hold it. Whoa. Sorry. Slow down a second. Now, let me ask you, caller. This. We're talking about something that happened, what, several decades ago?
No, it's an ongoing situation. I found out that if you're 5150, that I didn't commit a crime, and I was actually reporting the crime. They choose not to believe me. And
again, I ask you, how long ago did this happen?
Well, recently it's happened the 22nd of March. Well, I was, because I...
So this happened, wait a minute, this happened this year?
It's an ongoing situation. When you're a 5150, they continue to target the situation because...
No, the incident of the rape. Did the rape happen this year? That's my question.
Not this year, but it happened. It happened when I called. I actually made the report,
right.
And they came out, kicked the door in, took me in for a questioning at 5150. I was released. I was evicted, and then I got a job, and then I was fired because they found out that I was a 5150. And then again, I got another job. Then I was fired because they
how long ago? Excuse me. Yes? How long ago did this happen? How long ago were you 5150?
Well, not recently, but...
Well, that's the point. See, here's the problem we have, caller. You called me on my phone.
Constantly.
Wait a minute, caller. Wait a minute. Hold it. You called me repeatedly at home on this issue. And
yes.
I've told you, come to a Huff meeting to talk about it if you think it concerns, you know, either police abuse or homeless civil rights, and you've never done that. So I really don't want to spend airtime talking about this. If you want to, you know, get to a Huff meeting and talk about it, that's fine. Otherwise, the problem is, you know, and I don't want to put any burden on you as being a 5150, because I think that doesn't necessarily mean anything. Well, what does mean something is you have to have a clear statement of the facts, and you have to be willing to raise this issue in a way that I feel I can get a handle on it. Unless Linda has something she wants to say. Linda, you got something you want to say, or go ahead.
And Bart.
Go ahead.
I am concerned about the status of what this caller is saying,
mm-hmm.
that once you have a mental health care jacket, it's hard to get out from under it. In fact, it makes you susceptible to forced drugging and horrors like that. It's hard to get housing again. You know, it's like it makes you a dependent no matter what you know and what your experience is legally. So anybody who's concerned about homelessness should be informed about the 5150.
All right, Linda LeMaster, while I was in there, I saved a woman from being raped. I went to the counter and said that this woman.
Okay, again, we're gonna leave it right here. And the reason I'm cutting you off on this because of the following reason, you know, I'm concerned about A, your credibility, B, your willingness to be responsive to questions, and I'd like this to happen in a forum, in a situation where you actually present this information, and if it isn't 10 or 20 years old. Otherwise, it sounds like a personal obsession of yours and something that isn't really relevant to the rest of us except in the most distant way. So that's it for now on this issue. Get back to us. Get back to me on the Huff line at 423-HUFF, or come to a Huff meeting. Huff meets every Wednesday. Actually, if you come to the Peace Camp, there are people to talk to there who might be interested, and that's happening tonight at starts at 8 o'clock, and maybe some people down there today, but I think it's mainly a nighttime situation from 8 p.m. to 8 a.m. and you're invited to come to there to the county building at 701 Ocean in front of the courts, and that's my suggestion to you. Okay,
what about people that are being raped when they're...
And that is the story. See, we don't really have, I don't have the time, energy, or frankly the interest to try to unravel this in front of an audience with three members of the public waiting. We have another caller, perhaps. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert, just for the quick benefit of your last caller.
Yes.
There's a new show. It's on Fridays. I think it's called The Last Minority.
Uh-huh.
And that's The Focus. So she might want to listen and call, and the DJ would be probably a lot more able to help.
Quite possibly, and again, I invite her to come to the Peace Camp and talk about it. What's the time on Friday?
I don't know off the top of my head.
I'm looking. Oh, here we are, The Last Minority.
That's
it's actually, it's. I can read the damn thing. It's 3:30 to 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So, earlier caller, check out The Last Minority. On Friday, maybe that'll be another place to go to chat about this, and we'll see. And thank you for any other thoughts you have, caller, you want to say?
No, good show.
Thanks.
No, right on.
Bye-bye.
A compliment. Golly, hold on. Bring that guy back.
All right. So we have about 35 minutes left in the show. I think what I'm going to try to do tonight, at 10 o'clock tonight, is play the Peace Camp 2010 interviews, of which I have many. And I have not been able to play a single one on this show because certain people in the studio are taking up all my showtime. Now, I've warned the mayor just to shut up, but he won't. And then there's this guy, Fry, the attorney. He looks very judicious, but Frankly, I find him intimidating. And then there's Linda LeMaster, who insists on speaking. She's just a woman. And then there's this other guy with the beard, Curb Hugger Chris.
Can I say something about Ed Frog being
intimidating? There's this guy. He always interrupts.
Can I say something? Ed was far less intimidating last night when he was dancing around the drum circle, arms flailing and everything. And if old Judge Volkner and all his other friends in the courthouse
that greet,
all his buddies there, all his court buddies that keep greeting him every morning when he sleeps out with us, if they could have seen him last night around 10 o'clock, they'd had a different image of Ed. Ed was having a good time at Peace Camp 2010. And I'd like to invite everybody else in the sound
everybody
of my voice
has been
to come
invited
down.
About 30 times to Peace Camp 2010. So please do come down if you'd like. Starts at 8 o'clock tonight. And who knows, maybe there's something happening the day. But if you want to take a dump, you got to come at the nighttime, 8 p.m. to 8 a.m.
Get
your shit together until then. You'll wander around looking for an open bathroom while you can during the day. There are three visitors' bathrooms available during the daytime at the Asawi restaurant about half a block from Pacific Avenue on Lincoln, at the Bookshop Santa Cruz, provided Ryan and Neil Coonerty still like you. That's a visitor's bathroom. And then there's the last one, which is at the Pizza My Heart, which is a little cafe a couple of doors up from the Del Mar Theater at Lincoln and Pacific. Linda, you're champing at the bit to speak.
No,
go ahead. What
totally
is it? What is it you want to say? Anything particular?
I wanted to encourage people where the PeaceCamp 2010 blogspot.com is. You can send in your ideas, too, and send support through that thing, and hopefully they'll have my pictures on it soon.
Oh, ho. Shameless self-endorsement.
I'll speak to that as the emissary and answer that question. Yes, Becky Johnson, who has been so kind and so awesome, has done so much for us. One of the things that Becky has dedicated herself to from the very beginning is to make sure there's a decent journal of all of this being kept. And I don't know the details, but I do know that Becky is hard at work on making all of this stuff available, and that the cornerstone to that will be the URL that Linda just read to you, peacecamp2010.blogspot.com. There's ways for you to interact.
Good. Let's leave it there, shall we, Kerbucker Chris?
Robert's jealous.
I'm trying to get some information out on the show, Linda LeMaster, and it's a little hard.
How about a great idea?
Whip these guests. I'm turning down your mic, and I just turned. No, the mics don't work for you now, and Linda, you're history. And I'm turning down my. All right. What I'd like to get back to is issues that are coming up. Coming up at City Council in 3 days, 2 days actually, day after tomorrow on Tuesday. And Ed, I don't know if you'd looked them over, but the three issues I'm talking about will be coming up for a vote. And so if people want to tell the City Council what they think about it, they can. They can even call City Council now, 420-5020. You can call City Council right now and leave a message on that line that you think that there should be no arrest or harassment or ticketing of homeless people unless there's a shelter space available or unless there's a health and safety problem or some other criminal violation, real criminal violation, is happening. 420-5020 is the number to call. But you can also call about three other issues which are coming up, which I want to kind of get your thoughts on, Ed, which you've already been informed of a couple of them. One of them is a law that is being proposed that says, if you get a fourth infraction ticket after you've had three infraction tickets would be, let's say, for sleeping outside, for sitting next to a building, even if you're not blocking anybody's way, and let's say for smoking downtown, tobacco, a quarter of a block from Pacific Avenue instead of half a block from Pacific Avenue. Okay. So once you get your fourth ticket, once you get your fourth ticket, they want to give the city attorney the power to charge a misdemeanor on any fourth infraction of any kind. In other words, you may have gotten three different kinds of tickets. The minute you get a ticket of any kind after that, that can be charged as a misdemeanor unless you've gone to court and dealt with the fines and so forth. Mayor Rotkin, you may remember, said, this has nothing to do with sleeping. This has only to do with failure to attend court and deal with the consequences of the court. What's your reaction to that?
Well, it's just an intensification of the harassment by the City Council of homeless people. They're just doing everything they can think of to drive people away in the name of commerce. And this is just the latest step in that direction. Instead of facing the issue and dealing with it realistically and humanely, they're coming down with more force.
So you would oppose this law?
Sure.
Well, what do you do? I'm devil's advocate here. You know, what about people who don't attend their infraction tickets? And I'm not even going to go there. I'm sorry. I'm too tired of this stupid argument. What I will say is, what I notice, this is already passed at what's called a first reading at City Council. It comes up for a final reading day after tomorrow, which means a month from Tuesday it becomes law if they pass it. I've noticed that there is no police testimony indicating a problem, and there's no statistics that show infractions that are disregarded, and there's no testimony that shows which kind of infractions and what kind of people are disregarding them. Does it largely impact the homeless? Does it largely have to do with tickets that involve innocent behavior, like sitting down on the sidewalk, like smoking, which is really innocent behavior? Does it involve sitting on a bench for more than an hour?
I would submit to my attorney, Ed Fry over here, who's agreed to represent
my
me.
My point is, I want to finish this. That is, they aren't providing any statistics about who this impacts, and yet they're claiming it has no relationship to homeless people at all. Go ahead,
I would
Chris.
Submit that if I am written a ticket, and I have four of them in my pocket right here, they are unresolved, they will remain unresolved. I hope they fucking come for me with an injunction, okay?
And an injunction? Wait a minute, hold it. We're trying to clarify for the community what's actually happening. On Tuesday, in 2 days.
Okay, a misdemeanor.
In 2 days, what's happening is they will have a new law that will go into effect in a month that says if those three tickets are in your pocket and you haven't dealt with them, actually those three tickets probably won't be important.
I understand that.
It'll be, hold it, three more new tickets that will come in. Once you don't get them, the city attorney can then charge you with a new crime. Actually, no. He can do that already. He can already charge you with a new crime, a misdemeanor, immediately.
That is my
understanding. They passed that a year and a half ago. Now he will be able to say, the next time you go to sleep at night, that's a misdemeanor.
Right.
The next time you sit by the sidewalk, that's a misdemeanor. Anything you do can be charged as a misdemeanor on the fourth unresolved ticket.
I would submit that any infractionary law like this, and I don't have legal things, so I'll submit it to my attorney and let him comment on it afterwards, but any infraction type law like this, which is so patently unconstitutional, not to mention so patently unfair, so patently injudicious, so patently cruel, that to disobey it is not only a given, but it is your duty as a freedom-loving American to revolt against these laws and to ignore any tickets or any citations that are given. I would say this is political speech at this point. It becomes political speech. The very act of sleeping is now political speech, and I think we've shown that in a very glaring way down at Peace Camp 2010. But I would submit that the bro who doesn't come to Peace Camp 2010 tonight but sleeps on a river bottom is just as much making a political statement about his civil rights as anybody. The fact that that somehow we are onerous or we are criminals because we are ignoring these tickets and that we're going to be held accountable by the courts is horseshit, when the law itself is so patently an infringement of our human rights.
Good, I've got that, Chris.
So.
Now, any further thing? Yeah, sorry to interrupt your brief.
So I would submit to my lawyer what he thinks about that. I mean, you know,
you may have already said what you think of it. Is there anything more you want to say on that issue?
Well, the city is setting themselves up for a lot more useless public resources being wasted. The courts, the police, etc., the jails. You're going to make people guilty of misdemeanors. That means they're going to have to be able. They're going to have a right to the public defender services, full jury trials. This is very expensive stuff. This is just foolish policy on the part of these people, in their efforts to suppress the homeless and to kick them out of town. Really,
there's a second law that's been being proposed. It's called the Hotel Motel Registration Regulations, and that is going to require everyone who wants to get a room in a motel to show ID. Right now, apparently, it's up to the motel owner, but this is going to be made a citywide law requirement, penalizing the motel owner if they do not require ID from a person who is seeking a room. Will this have any impact on homeless people?
Yeah, in my opinion, it will, and it's being targeted, too. I think it's being targeted specifically, in my opinion, at very, very young people. We've had a rash over the last year of very, very young people, many of them runaways, underage people coming into town, and the kids will band together in groups of 4 to 6 people, sometimes larger groups, and they will rent a hotel room to provide shelter for themselves.
Got a phone call here.
And other
Chris.
Minors. So.
Yeah. Well, good. I'm glad to hear that. I think you're probably right. You're on the air caller with the three of us. And apparently not.
And in any case, that's who the law is targeting. They've had these kids in their radar for some time now. If you think the older bums out there take heat from these cops, they treat these kids like they are absolute fucking garbage, man. And I would like to ask Santa Cruz to think about what they would want their children to be treated like if they were to run into a spot of trouble, maybe run out of gas or whatever, or be caught in a town somewhere and have cops treat their children like this. How would you want your kids to be treated? Well, these kids are being treated like fucking Western animals and run all over the city because they know that these kids won't complain. They won't stand up for their rights. They're already doubly scared because they're runaways. So they're already being hunted by the law legally by the very nature of it. So this law to make IDs at motel rooms is targeted towards them because several motel rooms, motels in town, I won't name any names, have been very liberal about renting to young teenagers and giving them some shelter, God bless them, and letting them get out of the cold and out of the way of the cops.
Well, these teenagers are illegal runaways. You're suggesting that the motel owners and the city should collude in the criminal behavior of these teenagers?
I'm suggesting why the fuck they ran away in the first place, because you can't have much of a parent, man, if these kids got to have a reason why they're running away. I was a runaway at the age of 14. I survived from 14 to 18 on the streets of Boston by myself, and I'll tell you what, I had a goddamn good reason for doing it, and I won't get into it right now, but I did.
Gotcha. Okay. Ed, do you have any thoughts on this?
No, I don't. Actually, this is new to me, and I want to think about it before I start.
Sure, let me read a little of the agenda's discussion of this ordinance to give you some of at least the arguments in favor of the ordinance.
Yeah. I mean, I see where Chris is coming from, and I agree with his sentiments on that as far as it goes.
Well, certain hotels have acted as a sanctuary and have actually refused to give their registration records over in order to protect these kids. And what the cops want to do is make it absolutely mandatory that they take a certain form of ID, not any form, and that they turn those records over on demand to any police officer who walks into their motel and asks for them. And, you can argue the merits of it all you want, but it's targeted at young people.
Chris, where did you learn this?
Where did I learn what from?
That the police are, have you been talking to motel owners or police, or did you read the agenda?
Name the fact and I'll verify it. I don't know what I'm answering.
Well, we're talking about a particular ordinance that's coming up. Okay. And you just made a statement about it. Where did this issue come up for you? What? You just thought about it, or you talked to some motel owners about it?
No, I'm familiar with the issue. I've read up on it and studied it as part of the city council agenda.
I understand your question.
I see.
What in particular do you want him to
you're claiming you know certain motel owners. You're not going to say who. Does this mean you've actually had conversations with motel owners?
No,
about
I live with these kids every day. These kids are my friends.
Wait a minute. Then you've had conversations with the kids about this issue. And you've had conversations about the kids telling
you. I just know how they live their lives.
Okay, I'm just trying to find out where the information is coming from.
I just know how these kids live their lives.
Cool.
I know where they stay.
That.
They've been invited to their motel rooms for hospitality. I mean, these kids are my friends. They may be younger folks.
I understand now. Okay, I got you. Let me read you a little bit of the agenda of it, and then both of you, either of you, can comment. And, of course, people can call in. 427-3772. This is called the Hotel Motel Registration Regulations Amendment requiring verification of identity upon check-in. The recommendation is an introduction of an ordinance for publication amending Section 5.120.020, Home Hotels and Hotels Register requiring the verification of identity upon check-in to Santa Cruz City hotels and motels. Background. In 1975, the City Council adopted an ordinance adding Chapter 5.12 to the Santa Cruz Municipal Code regulating hotels and motels in the city. Pursuant to Section 5.12.020 of that ordinance, hotel-motel operators are required to assure that all guests who check into their respective establishments register to do so at the time of check-in. So it's already required, apparently.
To register.
To register. Good point. At a minimum, the guest register must set forth the name and address of the hotel or motel guest. As council members are aware, on a fairly regular basis, hotel and motel rooms in the city of Santa Cruz are used for illegal purposes, and the police department, in connection with its investigation of these particular crimes, advises that it is not unusual for persons intending to engage in criminal misconduct on hotel and motel premises to register under a false name and address. Discussion. The ordinance, if adopted by the council, would add a provision to the current section requiring hotel and motel operators to verify the identification of registrants through the guest's production of a driver's license, passport, government-issued ID card, tattoo on the arm, just kidding, or other acceptable proof of identification. The guest register would record that identification was verified in accordance with the requirement and note the type of documentation which is provided by the guest to verify the guest identification. Failure by the operator to do so would constitute an infraction. The ordinance would also require guest registries to be made available, this is your point, Chris, to the police department for inspection upon request, and would make any person who uses or attempts to use false identification for renting a motel room guilty of an infraction. Finally, in recognition of the fact that many hotels and motels now use paperless guest registries, the original 75 requirement that the hotel and motel guest fill out the guest register in his or her own handwriting has been deleted. This will be coming up on the City Council on the 13th, on Tuesday, at the 2 o'clock session. There's only one session of City Council, folks, on Tuesday, and it's at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. If you want to speak, let's say, on homeless issues, although this is, I think, a homeless issue, but let's say the sleeping ban and the peace vigil, you have to be there at 2 to talk at oral communications. There's a half an hour period where you'll be allowed, depending on Mayor Rutkin's preferences, 2 minutes or 3 minutes. I've reserved a 5 minute space to talk on these issues for a Huff speaker, and so who knows who that Huff speaker will be. So, that's the...
If you're not nicer to me, I'm not going
to
do it.
But you don't have to, Chris.
You're nice to me, man.
So,
I want to thank Ed while I got a chance, and I'm just thinking about it. Thanks for coming out and going through this. It's been a long day, and I'm over here looking at him. My fellow guest here is pretty tired, and it's been a long journey, hasn't it? It's been something else. It's been an adventure, man.
Chris, yeah, thank you. Thank you for thanking him. And but
great adventure. Thanks. You're welcome.
Yeah.
My pleasure.
Okay.
But you're doing battle with the government, would you?
In my control fashion, because I am trying to focus on this agenda item here, let me return the discussion to that particular point, if there's any discussion. Maybe there's not.
I said what I got to say. I mean, it's clear to me as a street person who the law is targeted at, because that's the motel rooms that have been getting the most busted lately, is motel rooms full with kids. And by kids, I mean these are teenage kids. I mean, we all know who they are. We all know who I'm speaking of when I speak of the street kids. And this law is more than anything targeted at them. And when they talk about raiding motel rooms, most of the time when they're raiding them, the drugs and the other shit is just an excuse. They're raiding them because there's six teenagers in there and they want to know what the fuck is up. Maybe they played the music a little too loud, or maybe there was too much traffic in and out of the motel room. And what really bothers me about this law is that certain motel owners, especially during the off-season, have very liberal policies towards this sort of thing and don't care that there are six people in their motel and maybe a little noisier than they should be. They tell them to quiet down, and that's okay because they want their money, because they want to sell these rooms that aren't getting sold during the off-season. And so they look the other way, and I just think that this is going to take one... This is one more way to remove one more sanctuary for some of the most vulnerable of our population. We spend a lot of time today talking about disabled people and pregnant women and all that sort of thing, but these kids get really ignored in this mess, and it really goes up my ass sideways, because everybody thinks that somehow they're just cannon fodder for this process. But they take more heat than any of us do down there from the police, because they're so... they're vulnerable. They won't complain, and they're minors, and you know, they can get away with it. They can violate their rights with impunity, and nobody's going to even care.
In fact, the
public's happy about it.
Any further thoughts on this, Ed?
No.
Okay. You're still considering it.
I'm being introduced to the subject, and
of course.
Don't want to spout off any, you know, undigested thoughts.
For sure. The one thing I notice about this whole thing is that there are no police statistics about who's being arrested, who's being busted, what the crime problem is, why the current law is insufficient, or anything that would either prove or disprove what you're saying, Chris. So they're, you know, they might say, oh no, it's a bunch of hookers and out-of-town mafia men who are arranging hit jobs, or who knows, you know, people arranging to engage in, you know, illegal banking activities to further disrupt the foreclosure situation. You know, obviously probably not, but there's no evidence of what they're doing. The police don't have to present statistics. All they have to do is say, we want a new law, and here it comes.
And a very big authority. The ability to demand a hotel or an inn owner's registrar on demand with no probable cause, no having to show any judge that it's appropriate or that they have a need to know this information is just so big brother that it's over the top.
So that's the second law. And if people are concerned about this law, and it's only getting a first reading this time, so the problem is, when these laws get a first reading, it's usually really the last reading. This is the only time it's really going to be discussed, if it's really even discussed at all, because they really, usually these council members have their agenda set for them by the city attorney or the city manager. Yeah,
this one sounds right for rubber stamping. I agree.
Some staff departments, and they're just going to go ahead and do it. But if you want to oppose it, you can call 420-5020, or if it's like, it may be like Ed, you're not sure about what it's all about, you want to think about it some more, you might want to say, let's put it on the back burner until we can reflect on it, get some more statistics. You can still call 420-5020 and say, you know, let's not ram this sucker through. Let's think about it. I mean, this is, you know, and you're going to say, well, it has two readings. Yeah, but see, they don't want to do a second reading change because that requires them to do a third reading again. If they make it, if they pass the law for the first reading and they come back for the final reading and they say, well, let's do some changes, that requires them to actually essentially start all over again and make a second reading after the third reading after that. So what they usually say instead is, well, we'll examine the law in 6 months and see if there are any problems with it, which they almost never do. I've seen this kind of excuse used by Rotkin and other people, and he is, and I say this not because I'm trying to be mean to Mike Rotkin, but I've actually heard him. He's sort of the lead voice on this kind of, I think he does it to facilitate action at city council so that things proceed smoothly and rapidly. But he will say, let's not have another reading. Let's not make an amendment here. Let's just pass it, and then we'll see in 6 months if there's a problem. But for some reason, 6 months later, nothing ever happens. There's no problem, apparently. Although there is a problem. People are suffering as a consequence whose voices don't get heard. So far we have two laws. We have this hotel registration law, and this three infractions, and then suddenly the fourth infraction is a misdemeanor law, which are coming up at city council. That other law, the second one I mentioned, the fourth is a misdemeanor, will be the final reading, you know, Tuesday. So if you want to object to that, 420-5020 is the number to call.
I mean, it's already to the point where cops, in order to enforce these, there's so many layers of laws now that they piled on top of each other, and they keep coming up with a new layer to the onion every week. It's to the point where cops got to carry around small booklets just to know what the fuck it is they're enforcing. And for my part, I can't remember whether I was supposed to be 14 feet from this or 10 feet away from this to fly my sign or sleep or what. I mean, it's to the point now where it is virtually impossible to obey this plethora of laws. And that's a point that I wanted to bring up that's relevant to this whole show, is that we picked like a scab today at one particular thing, primarily because it's the focus of the Peace Camp 2010, and that's the sleeping ban. And two points to that. One, that sleeping ban itself is not just one law. You're dealing with everything from the stupid you can't cover up with a blanket law to the you can't take a nap in your own RV, even if it's legally parked law. That whole, all of those laws are a multiplicity that come together to form what we call the sleeping ban. And then beyond that, the show today where Mike's talking about, you know, the contacts with police and why would we be so upset about that and everything. Well, you want to go another layer of the onion out. I also get 10 or 15 contacts a fucking week for flying my sign so I can beg alms and earn a living. I get more contacts because of sitting on the sidewalk because I'm not sitting in the right place, or I sit for longer than an hour. I actually have police officers who come out and time us and write down the time to make sure we stay there exactly an hour and not a minute longer. So, you know, we didn't talk about those, and I'm not going to talk about those. I'm not trying to get off track, but what I'm trying to say is we picked at one scab here today, but homeless people have the whole onion to deal with.
You know what I mean? And so before you take Mike Rotkin's attitude that this is just about where we have to sleep and it's only one contact tonight, and before you start buying into all that bullshit, understand that for us out here, it's a daily war where they have warped these laws and created so many of these laws that we don't know where to turn. It makes you fucking crazy, Ed. It makes you fucking crazy.
Absolutely. It's unnecessary harassment. It's the violent method. It's oppressing people, and it's got to stop.
Hear, hear.
Thank God. Well, you know, that's the first person I've ever heard say that besides us. So,
there is a third law that is supposed to be coming up, which actually is coming up. It is a code enforcement ordinance. Actually, no, it's not. It was mentioned in the paper a couple of days ago, and it's been mentioned on talk shows. It has to do with requiring all rental units to register so that and pay a fee so they can be inspected by the city. Although it doesn't involve any kind of rent control, it just involves to make sure they're all up to code. I want to talk. We'll talk about that for a moment. We have a caller, though. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hello.
Hey, Robert. I just wanted to say that if I ever am told that I am allowed to vote again and Ed Fry decides to run for a shitty council, I would give him my vote. But I tried to sign the thing. There were some people out here at the Safeway store on 41st Avenue taking signatures, and it was for some sort of liberal cause. I can't remember. But I was told because I was homeless and I didn't have a subtle address that I guess I'm not allowed to vote anymore.
That
so
is not
I don't
true.
Know what's going on with that. But thanks for your show. I'll listen.
Thank you. And I'm going to clarify for our listeners that is not true. You can register to vote. You use the address 115 Coral Street, Santa Cruz, California. And that is the address to the shelter, the homeless shelter here in Santa Cruz. So do not be lied to. You can vote. You should vote. We will be out there. In fact, I think I'm going to start registering to people to vote right down there at the peace camp. I think we'll get on that, and that'll be the next project since she's brought this up, that we'll register people to vote right there. And so
you can go to the county elections office
sure.
at the county government center and register there. And that
sure.
address again is
115 Coral Street. And any of us can answer that questions for you and help you too. There are a number of us who are familiar with voters' rights and working on that area as well. So getting homeless people registered.
So thank you, Chris. And that's important stuff. There was something on the city council agenda that looks like it's been removed from the agenda. That was the third law that I was talking about, the law about registering all these units, all these rental units. And apparently that's provoked a lot of anger from realtors who don't want to do it, and then from some students. It was even KSCO, two students were denouncing it the other day. A couple of people have talked to me about it personally, whom I know, who are sympathetic to homeless civil rights causes, although they're also either renters in illegal units, and they're afraid that illegal units will be cut back significantly, and the housing stock will be cut back significantly if people are required to register those units. I'm ambivalent about this because I know I'm in favor of rent control. I'm in favor of making units habitable, but the same argument that's used against rent control would also be used against this, that you are cutting back the housing stock, or because because people are be less likely to try to open up units or continue making units available if either A, they're rent controlled, or B, they have to be inspected. Any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I agree with that. The motives there will be it'll be cutting back and cutting back on the housing stock, and that's the last thing we want to do. I mean, we need more housing, not less.
I would agree. In the East Coast cities where I've seen this sort of fight really start to reach ahead, especially with rent control and stuff like that, you have seen a dramatic loss of housing. The fact of the matter is, folks, 90% of the housing for really poor people does not meet these codes. It's a lot like the laws we were talking about homeless people. You can't do it. There's just too many of them in so many ways that you got to have a decent amount of money and you got to be a really well-off property owner before you can bring your rooms and your rentals up to these codes. So let's face it, for poor folks anyway, the majority of these places, and that's why we don't complain and the landowner doesn't complain and nobody complains and most people
people, it doesn't get found out because everybody's cool with it. I agree. It's going to take a lot of, if they try to enforce this, it's going to take a lot of housing out of the market. So.
Yeah. Well, this, you know, behind all this is a possibility that the city is being motivated by the need for revenue. There's going to be an awful lot of fines imposed if they go out inspecting on a mass basis, inspect housing. They're going to find a lot of violations, which means they're going to have to fine a lot of people, which means a lot of more revenue for the city.
We all know how much Mike Rockin just loves the new revenue stream. He was so excited about taxing pot in the paper the other day, I thought he was going to pee himself. He's like, oh, we're going to tax the hell out of it. It's just a luxury. And he's wicked excited. He's like, yeah, he's in favor of it. Of course he is. And more money, more of our money that he can blow on God knows what they spend it on around here. But, you know, it's not the people's needs, that's for sure.
Better they should think about taxing the billionaires among us and the millionaires among us and redistributing the wealth a little bit so that everybody has the basic minimums met.
Hear, hear. A couple other things on the agenda for those who are interested in the city council meeting. Again, a 2 o'clock session only, not a 3 o'clock session as is usual, or a 7 o'clock session as we all used to remember, but a 2 o'clock session. There are a couple things coming up on the consent agenda. That's the agenda which you cannot talk on except for 2 minutes on all items put together unless you get a city council member to agree to allow you to talk on the item individually, which you know, you kind of have to go with your hat in hand to the city council, unlike at other cities where you can pull an item off the agenda and say, I want to talk about it for 2 minutes, and you get to talk about it. There's the Homeland Security Grant coming up. That's item 19 on the city council agenda. And I'm kind of looking up right now to see what that involves. Presumably, it's more money for the cops, for one thing or another. It isn't necessarily, you know, directed at, you know, surveilling the library books. But I'm wondering, this kind of collusion with this Homeland Security makes me nervous.
You got to explain, because I have no clue what you're talking about. But you got my attention with Homeland Security.
Well, it says, resolution amends the budget in the amount of $82,000 to accept the grant funds from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. This will is provided directly to California through a fiscal program. It's a reimbursement grant, provides financial assistance for the purchase of various types of specialized equipment to enhance the capability of local agencies to respond to critical incidents and threats.
In other words, to allow the higher profit margins for the arms manufacturers and other device makers that the police use.
That's a very cynical view, Ed Fry.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to get to the bottom of things.
I think you might be getting down to the shitty bottom of everything, Mr. Shitter
so
Provider.
So basically, it's money sitting by fancy new tasers and zap us with them. I mean, you know, well, I mean,
that's all. I'm
supposed
more
to cheer for that.
The 2009 funding was not approved by the state until May 21st, 27th of this year. Santa Cruz received $438,000 to share among its first responder agencies through a predetermined formula. The police department will receive $82,000 of this allocation. The department had already budgeted $20,000 in expected Homeland Security grant income, and so they may need to amend the budget to reflect the entire $82,000. The Santa Cruz County Anti-Terrorism Approval Authority, whatever that may be, was established with representatives of county public safety agencies to provide guidance for the expenditure of these funds. Historically, the Santa Cruz Police Department has utilized the funding for upgrading items to aid emergencies such as earthquakes and floods. The police department proposed expending funds on search and rescue equipment, upgrading portable radios to be compliant with new narrow-banding requirements, and training for earthquake and emergency management. Now, that sounds pretty innocent, Ed. What is this stuff about arms stuff? Now, come on, they're just trying to be helpful in emergencies.
Well, you heard what percentage is going to the police department, so they're not buying umbrellas for people to stay out of the rain. You know, they're buying weapons and other devices to
deploy against us, to deploy against the people.
Yeah.
You know?
Wait a minute. This memo was prepared by Zach Friend of the police department, who is, as we know, a friend to us all.
Yeah, well, where does Zach Friend live? I want to know, I bet he's got a boat and a house down in Monterey. I bet he has absolutely no connection to this community whatsoever, as do a very large percentage of these cops. And I'd like to find out exactly what percentage of these police officers actually live within the city limits and when we're going to pass a law that says that all new rookies that are inducted into the Santa Cruz Police Department must live within the city limits. I got a right to be policed by my own people, not by fat cats who live in Monterey and don't give a shit about our town and so run every time there's a riot, run away rather than defend the people and defend those the businesses and do their job. which is to stand toe-to-toe with crime.
Now, here is a memorandum. Here's something else on the consent agenda. Sorry, Chris. I feel like I have to break in because we haven't got much time. In fact, we're over time. But here's on item 11 on the consent agenda is a memorandum of understanding, which has to do with a new community service officer. Now, what impact does this have on the homeless community? This has to do with a community service officer to assist in the implementation of a downtown cooperative retail management business real property improvement district. Phew. Which is really a downtown a business improvement district.
I think if they think that if they make the name long enough, we'll be so confused, we won't know what's going on.
Let me say what it is, Chris. It's complicated. It's complicated language. Yeah. In order to provide these services, it is necessary for the city and agency to enter into a memorandum of understanding to provide terms and scope under which these services will be provided. This will continue agency funding in the amount of $86,000 for the upcoming fiscal year for the assignment of a full-time community service officer in the downtown, a full-time CSO. That's, I think, a police officer in light blue who walks around.
Yeah, and virtually useless for getting any kind of community service, at least from the poor. I mean, what she'll do is she'll, or him, or whoever they appoint, will liaison with the merchants and find out what their needs are. That community officer will not be down there taking hate crime reports from homeless people.
Yeah, it smacks of another subsidy for commerce from the government, taxpayer money.
Well, there's all kinds of things on this agenda. Again, all kind of early in the afternoon when people are not likely to be attending this thing. There's community programs for gang violence, gang reduction strategy, $50,000 to serve as a placeholder in a community-wide gang reduction strategy, authorize the mayor to work with leaders of other jurisdictions to form a gang prevention intervention task force, provide administrative staffing to establish countywide gang prevention, encourage task force to prepare evaluation measurements to allocate funding. In other words, it sounds like a bureaucratic program. There's also a medical marijuana change, a medical marijuana dispensary ordinance change. I know, Ed, that's been an old-time fighter against the drug war, against the war on people that masquerades as a war on drug abuse. You've been involved in that for a long time. This is a memorandum which this, again, proposal states that I'm getting the wrong one again. Sorry. Let's see. It hasn't quite come up. Anyway, we are kind of out of time, and we're cutting into the time for making contact, which is I always used to go over about an hour on the show because I never can shut up and always have too much to talk about, particularly when I have people like yourselves who don't deserve to be cut off, as you're constantly being cut off, Chris. You have a lot to say, and
no, there's a lot of people. Don't worry about things like that. We don't have to worry about our reactions to ourselves. I think our relationship to ourselves is fine. What we need to worry about more than anything,
cutting you off again,
is that it's us against the world.
I'm saying that yes, it is, and I'm saying that I wish we had more time. I wish we took more time, but certain members of the collective want to fill this time with, I think, essentially news stuff that you can get online anyway. This stuff you're hearing here, you're not going to hear online. You're not going to hear it from anybody.
Well, you will hear archive shows from us online. Tell them how to do
that, Robert. You'll hear archive shows. If